Hi, Kathy Wells. Welcome to KABU.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Kathy Wells is the Energy Projects Coordinator for Lancaster Choice Energy. Lancaster is a city of 160,000, about 60 miles, I think, northeast of Los Angeles. A lot of residents commute to work in Los Angeles, I understand. How many years ago was it, Kathy, that Lancaster City Council decided that their electricity provider, Southern California Edison, was not doing its job, was too expensive, and they decided to form a public electric utility called Lancaster Choice Energy? Give us the history.
Well, the city of Lancaster, we began looking at becoming a community choice aggregator around 2012. We officially launched in 2015, so it took some time for us to get there, but it really began under the leadership of our mayor and our city council. We started off wanting to be the solar capital of the world. We are a desert community. We have a lot of open, unused land without infrastructure. It's perfect for utility-scale solar, as well as putting solar on rooftops. And back around 2011, we launched a program called Solar Lancaster. We partnered with Solar City, which is now Tesla, but we partnered with them to provide incentives for all of our residents to put solar on the rooftops. And we set out a goal to become net zero, meaning we wanted to generate more renewable energy within our city limits than we consume. And that's kind of how we got on this energy road. And along the way, we discovered, you know, hey, there's an opportunity here to become a community choice aggregator and actually control the energy that we do purchase.
That is, under California law, you had the right to, in fact, secede from Southern California Edison and take all the customers with you.
We do. We are the default program. So back in the late 1990s, when California did their deregulation and the market basically crashed, California government said, we're not doing this anymore. We're not deregulating. We're going back to utilities. But what came out of that was Assembly Bill 117, and that actually is to establish a community choice aggregation. So it's allowed by government entities or joint power authority entities. It's not allowed for individuals, individual businesses, individual homeowners cannot go out and buy their own energy supply. But if you belong to a community, such as the city of Lancaster, you can participate. And it is a choice program. That's why we're called Lancaster Choice. Although we are the default, which means when we signed up and told the state we're going to become a community choice aggregator, everybody in our community switched over to our company.
But they had the right to opt out.
Absolutely.
How many have opted out?
We actually are at 94% participation rate, so not a lot. And that happened right when we launched, I would say. And we get people that move in and move out all the time, but we have stayed at that participation rate since we launched.
Uh-huh. 94%. That's great.
It's wonderful.
You were the first, but many, many other cities and counties and, in fact, regions of California are now community choice aggregators. They all take a different name, like East Bay Community Energy or Marin Energy, Sonoma Energy, and now the Clean Power Alliance in Southern California. Now there are, 19, with many, many more lined up, ready to get their proposals. Lancaster must have inspired many of them.
Yes, we spend a lot of time speaking at different cities, different communities. Our mayor, actually, he's traveled internationally talking about our program because we're pretty innovative with it. And what's unique about our program than these others is we're actually a city. We're a department of our city. So we're run by the city council. We don't have a board of independent, like these joint power authority groups, the LA County, for example. Each community that participates has a representative. They serve on a board and they make all the decisions. Well, we are managed by our city council. And what's great about that is our city council sets our rates. Our city council tells us we want to be net zero or we want to buy local. And our community can come to our public meetings and talk to our council members. It's really been creative. The other thing about being a city is all of that revenue that was leaving our community was about $60 million per year, leaving our community, going to Southern California Edison. That money stays in our community. It comes back into the program, and we put it right back out into other programs for our community, our residents, our businesses. So we benefit from that. So it was really a way to generate revenue. Yes, we want to save the world, but it's also we want to save our community. A lot of the California businesses and a lot of the California cities struggled in 2007, 2008 when the economy took a nosedive. Cities rely on sales tax and property tax. Well, all the houses are boarding up and people are leaving California. The cities were in big trouble. So we needed to come up with some new ways to be resilient. And so this was one of the reasons why we chose this business. And another thing that we do is we actually have created our own joint powers authority to have other cities become a CCA. We help them become their own CCA. We don't run their CCA. We just help them do the feasibility and launch. And we've got 10 cities, actually, that are going to be working with us.
And I gather you're going to have a major role, at least, in that. Tell me about your energy supply. You said you're a high desert community. Mm-hmm. You really do get a lot of sun, and it comes right down on your homes. What's the percentage of your energy that you're using from some of those very large desert installations versus rooftop?
We manage our portfolio, right? We have to kind of stay within the parameters of what the state says we have to have, we have to purchase. So we have to have a certain percentage of local energy. I will tell you that most of the utility-scale solar that has been built out here is used by the utility companies. They are the ones that built them and purchased the energy directly from them. We do have a local 10-megawatt solar system that we purchased the energy directly off of, and we had it built in our city. We're about 38% renewable sourced energy right now, which is wind energy. We're right by the Tehachapis, and solar energy, small hydro. So that's kind of some of the energy that we purchase. But we also have a 100% green product that we offer. So customers, if they want to pay a little bit more, they can have that 100% green product. So we do offer two choices to the customers, but our base product is greener than Edison. We're 60% carbon free. That's part of it. And we have a goal to be 100% carbon free by 2030. So we're heading down the right path.
What about in transportation? We're talking about electricity use. A lot of the greenhouse gas emissions in any community are from transportation, cars, trucks, and diesels, which is the worst of the worst.
Yep.
Are you a plan somehow for encouraging people and subsidizing to some extent, like Norway and other countries are doing, the private automobiles, as well as mass transit is probably a city your size could have mass transit, it seems to me.
Well, we do, and I should tell you, we're getting the mass transit. The speed train is going to be coming through. They're working on going from San Francisco all the way down to San Diego, and they're going to be able to finish that. I don't know when the high-speed rail will be done, but as far as transportation electrification within our community, that is something that we're focused on, not only as the energy department, but also partnering with our transit authority, for example, Antelope Valley Transit Authority. They actually are purchasing all electric buses, and they will have the first, by May, the first 100% all-electric bus fleet in the nation. So we have 33 electric buses right now. They're working with Lancaster Choice Energy. We're developing a special rate. That's another bonus. You know, you control your rates. You can come up with an incentive program to get these businesses to adopt alternative energy sourced transportation. So the electric bus is a big story. In fact, the buses are built right here in Lancaster. We have a company called BYD, stands for Build Your Dreams. It's a manufacturing company. They build large batteries, and we're the first in the United States. Their first factory came here in the city of Lancaster. I think they came in 2013 or 2014, and they've got upwards of 800 staff now, and they're building the electric buses for them. They build them for all over the place.
That is a great story, because whereas people talk about light rail a lot, which is important, and big rail, in fact, if we're going to actually make the cities accessible, bus transportation is really fundamental, because it's basically has so fewer capital costs than laying track. All of the costs of rail, are much of them are avoided. Electric buses and jitneys and various kinds of trams, it seems to me, are an important mm-hmm. part of the transportation future. It's great to hear that you're pioneering that. I had no idea. Mm-hmm. This is Bill Resnick for the Old Mole. I'm talking to Kathy Wells, who's the Energy Project Coordinator for the City of Lancaster, California, who in fact has taken over the electric supply function from Southern California Edison. They now have a city public utility that has 94% of the customers in the Lancaster area are with Lancaster Choice Energy, is the name of the public agency. Kathy, in planning for Lancaster's 100% community energy and helping plan these 10 other cities, I assume some of these 10 other cities are not desert communities or high wind communities. My understanding is that studies have been done to indicate that there is no county in California where the sun and the wind is not sufficient to create a great majority of the local energy use within the county. That is, smallish utility scale things, some wind turbines, a lot of solar. There's a huge amount of land wasted in cities and parking lots and rooftops, things that could be used to generate energy. Are some of the cities that you're working with cities that don't have this vast amount of sun or wind?
Yeah, some of our cities have not launched yet. We've got five of them that are kind of in a holding pattern. The state has told them you cannot launch until 2020. And then the other three cities are still fairly brand new. They're having launched this year. Right now, it's about getting up and running and getting their green energy and getting their program and retaining customers. But we are gearing up for when they're ready to start launching programs and start moving forward into introducing what you're talking about, which is distributed energy resources, such things such as solar, rooftop solar, battery storage, electric vehicle charging stations. And it doesn't matter, you know, we're talking about we're in a desert community, we have a lot of sun, and some of them, yeah, it's different. But all of these sources are volatile on their own. But if you combine them together, if you combine these resources together, for example, wind does very well in the evening. Well, solar's only going to do good when the sun's out. But if you have a couple of those together, now you've got some alternative energy, and you know, you're not as reliable to the grid. And that's what we're trying to do. Our new goal is kind of this grid defection. So what Lancaster's doing right now is we have a lot of projects that we're beginning, that we're partnering with, that we want to build and do a proof of concept. And we will take these projects once we know what works, what doesn't work, and we will take them to these other cities and show them how to do it. This is what you do. This is how you do it. There's lots of ways to creatively finance these programs because you're a government entity. You know, we have municipal bonds. We have all kinds of innovative ways that we can encourage this development. One of the things our mayor did, the very first thing that we did, is we issued a solar ordinance, which says any new home development within our city must have solar on its home. Every rooftop must have solar. So that has been established. And as a city, you can do that, right? The other thing that we've done is we've issued a net zero energy ordinance. So now any new development that is built, any new homes, must become net zero. So they must have battery storage and solar. It's a bigger reach code than what the state of California is actually requiring right now.
When you do it in mass, you can cut down the costs. When just individual homeowners do it, it can be expensive. But when a whole bunch of people do it in a contiguous area, it becomes much, much cheaper.
We're always sort of making these goals, these reach goals. We're pushing kind of the envelope of, you know, nobody's done this yet. How come you guys are doing it? Well, because we can. We want to try it. I mean, nobody's done it. You know, for example, one of the programs I'm working on is through the California Energy Commission. It's a grant project to develop Lancaster as an advanced energy community. And there's things that they want to see, such as a residential microgrid. We will have the first residential microgrid within the next 4 years.
Why is that so important?
It's important because, first of all, we're in California. We know we're going to be having this earthquake. It's going to be coming soon. But for reliability, it's for, not only does it save costs, it saves stress on the grid, but it's also emergency reliability. I mean, you are self-sustaining. If something goes wrong or if there is an emergency, you can disconnect from the grid and you rely just on your microgrid. You control the energy that you use, you control the cost, and there's a safety.
Yeah, in New York after the Hurricane Sandy, there were some places that continued to have electricity because they had solar panels, and people would come with their cell phones to fill up their cell phones so that they could communicate, or to fill up batteries for a radio so they could hear what was happening, and, of course, to refrigerate medicine and some foods. And the buildings that had that solar cooperated in helping their communities. A lot of people were saved because of that. If one elevator is working in a 20-story building, infirm people can, in fact, move around a little, and medicines and food can be brought up to them.
You know, that's interesting that you said that, too, because that's one of the things on this grant we were looking at is maybe it's not doesn't have to be a microgrid, but what can we do for reliability in the short term? Well, that's battery storage. If you have battery storage, you can run your energy at least temporarily, depending on how much energy storage you have. But we were thinking, you know, for our emergency operations center, which happens to be our sheriff department, they should be fully sustainable. We need to have these safe places for people to come, and we want them to, you know, have electricity and be comfortable and have lighting. And one of the things with these electric buses we're looking at, and we have grant money to do this, is technically those are mobile batteries. So in a case of an emergency, we should be able to take 2-3 of those buses, drive them to where the power outage is, and get them back up and running. Wouldn't that be great?
And not only those buses, every electric car is a battery. If, in fact, in a great emergency, or in just a really stressful period, because cars are not used maybe a couple hours a day, for those batteries are sitting there, and the technology is such that you can use those 3,000 or 5,000 car batteries that might be in Lancaster, or 20,000, they can be a supply of energy. Mm-hmm. It seems to me modern technology really has offered us an enormous opportunity for the most reliable and cheap energy without needing to build these huge grids that go thousands of miles and have to be built in the most treacherous conditions where there are going to be mudslides anyway and earthquakes and huge storms blowing down the pylons. We really have a terrific opportunity. I'm so happy to hear that you are bringing it to life.
Yeah, we've got a lot of irons in the fire, I like to say. You know, one of the other programs we're looking at is getting these resources that are out in the community. People do have solar. We have batteries on our museum. But how do we get these to maybe talk together? So we're looking at developing a virtual power plant through a software program that it's exactly what you said. All of the electric vehicle charging stations, for example, if they're all networked together citywide, and we say we have a need for this energy, everybody plug in at 3 o'clock, boom, now we've got this a massive amount of energy, or in an emergency, for example. These are things that we're working on. I think that's why we were successful with our phase two for this EPIC grant, it's called. Yeah, more to come. We've got lots of different things that we're going to be launching this year.
Yeah, you know, this is great. Of course, the utilities are trying to fight back. They're doing everything they can to save themselves, including charging Lancaster fees for whatever that the utility can charge them for in order to maintain themselves. Is that a worry of yours, these new fee charges that they're demanding?
No, and it's actually not new. It's just a change to how they're doing it. But it's, in short, it's basically it's an exit fee.
Right.
And what they're saying is, for all of the customers that leave us, we've already entered into these long contracts and paid all this money for this energy that we're not going to use now. So these are stranded assets. So they charge you a small percentage, and each customer sees that on their bill. But, you know,
They're increasing the fee amount, though.
Increasing the fee.
It seems to me it makes it much more difficult. If they raise the fee high enough, they could ruin you. And they're trying to do that. There's no question about it.
They are. But I will tell you, we have a united voice for the community choice aggregators. We have an entity called CalCCA, and it's all of the CCAs are members of it, and so we have a united voice up at the PUC, and they hear us. We definitely are part of those proceedings. We're definitely very involved in that. And for Lancaster, we're not that worried about it because, you know, you're vintaged. Basically, when you launched as a CCA. We launched in 2014 is when we filed. We locked in at the 2014 vintage rate. So that rate is what has been increasing up or down every year. The ones that are coming out in 2018, like LA County, it's huge. It is a huge percentage. And you're right, makes them not able to provide lower rates than the utility company. We do. Our rates are lower. We can beat Edison's rate. So why would you leave? It's a no-brainer.
Yeah, you're in a much better position than all of the others. Kathy, we have to conclude.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, Kathy Wells, the Energy Project Coordinator for the City of Lancaster, doing such important work, not just for Lancaster, not just for Southern California or California or the United States, but in fact for all of us on Earth. If we don't deal with global warming, we're going to roast to death, and Lancaster has gone as far as any city can with plans for so much more. If universalized, that would end a good deal of the climate crisis. Kathy, thanks so much for talking to us.
Thank you so much. Have a good day.
You too.